Our next presentation is from Employment for All, and to present is Brian Gilbert and Tina Skills, is it? Yes, and they're from NAPC. So here's Brian and Tina.
Good morning. My name is Brian Gilbert. I'm the Corporate Director of Employment Services at Help the World Foundation, and I'm also the Chapter President for Indiana APSE. I'll let Tina introduce herself.
All right. I'm Tina Skeel, and I am the Program Director for the Indiana Works Project, which is the WIPA project for Social Security.
So we're here today starting a few months ago. Lee and Florence had reached out to me, and they were really wanting to start to develop a little bit more of a partnership with NFB and with NAPSE. There's a lot of overlap in the missions of the two groups, and we were really excited. We were invited to actually come and be guests on the NFB Newsline show. I believe it was back in July or August that we were interviewed on the show and the program aired. So it was just an opportunity for us to talk a little bit about the mission of NAPSE and how it relates to what NFB is doing. And we've continued to just keep up the dialogue and try to work together in the areas that overlap. So that's what brings us here today, which is to talk a little bit more about who we are and what we do and how everyone that's at the convention here today might be able to work with us to really help move forward the idea of competitive integrated employment.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the history and how things integrate together, but just to kind of prove what a small world this is. So I got my introduction into the rehabilitation system in about 30 years ago. Some of you who have been around for a minute might remember a VR counselor by the name of Tom Eubanks. Yep. Okay, a lot of people in this room know his name. I worked on a National Science Foundation grant at Ball State University, utilizing the integration of, it was at that time, Dragon, Dictate, and Vocalize. We're trying to use voice recognition systems with screen readers in the very, very beginning technologies. So it was my introduction, trial by fire. Basically, the technology that we were using is the same technology that was in the 1980s answering machines to try to work. So technology has come a long way. In that process, Tom Eubanks, as I was graduating, said, well, why don't you become a job coach? I didn't know what a job coach was, but I was pretty sure I wanted to be it. And 30 years later is how I got into this field and have been involved over the years with promoting employment for individuals with disabilities. The second part of this story about being a small world is in my junior year of college at Ball State, I took a test and realized that there was something kind of wrong, and a teacher tested, and finally after about 20 years of struggling through school, realized I had a learning disability. So now I use a screen reader for me personally. So this technology not only was something that I started with in college, but now is part of my everyday life. So understanding how important technology is in your world is huge, and understanding those employer accommodations. Katie's story, where'd Katie go? Is she gone already? Oh, there you are. Katie, I'm with you, sister. Trying to make those accommodations was not an easy process, and sometimes you have to go up the chain. And that's why organizations like ours, working together, it's a collaborative effort, is such an important thing, because there really is power in numbers. It really is. And all these laws that we have aren't any good unless we actually use them. It's like a muscle. There you go. I got a guy in the back row. Thank you very much. I could talk all day about the importance of utilizing the legislation that's out there, because it's just like a muscle. If you don't use it, it just atrophies. So we want to make sure that we use those laws in the best way possible. So NAPSE, or APSE, which is our national organization, has been around since the 1980s. So Dr. Murr talked a little bit about the history. In 1840, some of the original schools were developed. And then in the 1940s and 50s in the United States, we started actually seeing some sheltered employment. Families started talking about, well, I'd like my child to work, primarily in the developmental disability world. And it really wasn't until the 1980s that people started talking about community employment. In 1988, the chapter called the Association for Persons in Supported Employment started. It started out with a group of family members, advocates, individuals with disabilities who recognize that community employment, people should have the opportunity to have fair wages and fair pay in an integrated setting. So they really, really pushed to try to work closer for that integrated setting. And that's how supported employment came to come. It actually was part of the Department of Education started initial grants. There were about 40 states that started out with grants around supported employment, and their primary purpose was to create community integrated employment. That means fair wages in a community setting. Now, I know we have some folks in the front that had some questions about sheltered employment. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. But what I will tell you is we should be really proud, because Indiana was one of the leaders who really pushed community employment. Our chapters have grown at a national level. We are now international. We are in Japan, Australia. I'm trying to think where else. There are several other places that we're now involved. Our membership is about 5,000 individuals. So we really want to continue to develop that. And as we work together, hopefully we can start integrating our memberships as well. Our mission as NAPSE is a membership organization that promotes and expands quality community employment outcomes of choice, again, going back to that choice question, for all people with disabilities. So when we were talking about putting the focus on integrated employment, I heard very clearly in Dr. Murr's conversation that choice is a big piece of that. But we have an awful lot of work to do. I pulled statistics the other day from the Disability Statistics Organization and was a little surprised on how far we have to go. I'm always kind of watching that as part of being involved with APSE at a national level as well as a state level. But when I pulled our national statistics, I was very concerned. So the percentage of non-institutionalized male and female, and I'm reading this definition directly off the web page. So percentage of non-institutionalized male and female ages 18 to 64 of all races, regardless of ethnicity, thank you, and all educational levels, and this is 2016 data, showed that in Indiana, the non-disabled workforce, or individuals who identified themselves as not having a disability, was 79.3%. For individuals with visual disabilities, it was 41.6%. That's huge. That's a gigantic gap. What concerned me even more is in the ranking of 51 states, technically, states and territories. We were, are you ready? Anyone want to take a guess where we are? So as far as how well we're doing, we're number 39. That means we're almost to the bottom, folks. That means we have an awful lot of work to do. The states that are leading it, anybody knows the state who's leading employment for individuals? You're real close. Who said North Dakota? North and South Dakota is the weirdest thing. I read that data and went, are you kidding me? Like, literally, North Dakota. That is a good one. It is a good point. There are statistics. You got to look at the N if you all are into looking at statistical data. But North Dakota has 70.1 and South Dakota is 63.2. Yeah. You want to guess who's the worst?
Wyoming.
Not quite. West Virginia. Are you ready for West Virginia numbers, folks? 29. Oh, boy. West Virginia. Sadly, the other one who's right above West Virginia is Puerto Rico. So, and knowing that they have had just massive decimation with the hurricanes, it's very disappointing. So, at any rate, that's just some statistics. That's why this partnership is so huge. You know, we talked about the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it did help in many, many levels. I look at education. We now have textbooks that are available in multiple formats, but I'll tell you, not all of them are, and not all those publishers are very nice. I've been to Bozeman and worked with publishers trying to get access to books. It's horrible. So we still have a lot of work there. We have the Olmstead Act that was essential in helping people live in an integrated setting that they want. Now we have WIOA, or the Work Enforcement Investment and Opportunity Act. How many of you are familiar with WIOA? Okay. How many of you know that they're looking at reopening those regulations? Okay. So here's where the advocacy comes in. So what WIOA has actually allowed is a large conversation around transitional age youth. So there is a big push to get vocational rehabilitation, working with those kids at an earlier age. There's a large conversation around sub-minimum wage, and we've already heard lots of conversation about that in the TIME Act. It's about they're looking at one of the biggest conversations with the WIOA Act is they want to open it up again to talk about sub-minimum wage. That's the big conversation that they want to modify that language around sub-minimum wage to allow sub-minimum wage. They want to also open it up to
make it work.
Say again. That ding 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 ding. Exactly. Well, they're trying to modify it because they thought that the regulations that were put into it, there was a lot of lobbying going on, feeling that it was too stringent. It put too much onus on the state's vocational rehabilitation system to try to do those outreach to students. I don't know if you all have children or you're a student in this room, but man, you cannot do enough to help students. We need to engage kids early on. So that conversation is right there. There's also pieces in it around the one stops. How many have been into their work ones? Okay, how many have had an interesting experience trying to get accessibility in a work one? Okay, yeah, all right. So again, that's part of WIOA. I'm going to hand the microphone back over to Brian. I just wanted to give you a little bit of history on why we need to work together. Hold on just a second.
No, Frank, we ain't got time. Let's go.
So again, we've talked about a lot of the history of employment first. We've gone over the definitions. And now we're talking, and we recognize the need for really advancing this idea of employment first, but it begs the question, well, how do we do that? So NAPC sort of led the charge last year, actually starting 2 years ago, to take really the first major step forward, and it was the passing of State Senate Bill 390, which was actual legislation. It made Indiana just the 17th state to pass legislation that stated that employment first was going to be the policy of the state. So the definition in the law was that employment first meant advancing competitive, integrated employment, including self-employment, as the first and preferred option when providing services to an individual with a disability, regardless of the nature and severity of the injury. And again, the other part that went into this legislation was the idea of informed choice, that individuals, while we are advocating for competitive integrated employment to be the preference, the most important thing is that individuals are being presented with all of their options, all of the services and supports that are available for them, and that each person is really entitled to make that decision for themselves. What is the best fit for them? What is it that they want to pursue? So moving forward with that, again, that is really just the first step. So we put that law into place. It doesn't really say, okay, here's what we're doing, steps 1, 2, and 3. What it did do is it created an item for the Rehab Services Commission, which is appointed by the governor, and they are tasked with overseeing employment for people with disabilities and really looking at those numbers and seeing how those numbers can be improved. And what the commission did was appointed a task force to look at that and to make recommendations to the commission on the steps that need to be taken. So that's really one area where NAPC has been reaching out to membership and reaching out to the general public on what are the steps that are needed. And one of the subgroups in the task force is specifically looking at self-advocates, people with disabilities, and asking them, what are the barriers that you are all facing that need to be addressed in order to make integrated employment really improve? So this is ongoing. Our initial recommendation to the commission is going out within the next month or two, and from there we'll be taking the action steps. So certainly reach out. We'll be putting information on that back table, contact information for myself, Tina, how to get in touch with NAPC. Let us know what your needs are so we can advocate down the line and really incorporate that into the legislation. NAPC also has several subcommittees. We're always looking for people to participate in those. Most of them are via phone conference. We have a marketing and membership subcommittee, so that deals with a lot of the social media and our webpage and just works on how do we engage current membership, but also constantly looking to recruit new members and new partnership organizations. We have a transition subcommittee, so they are looking at youth and students and educators and really working to make sure that the students have a plan, that they know after high school what is it that they want to do, not that they get to the end of high school and then no one has talked with them and worked with them as far as what are the next steps, whether it be secondary education or employment. We have a public policy committee. Obviously, Tina's talked a lot about the legislative efforts. And then we also have our conference committee, and I'll talk about the upcoming state conference in just a minute. The other really big way for people to get involved is there's a project that's just starting up now, really focusing on self-advocates. It's a project that was funded through a grant from the Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. And the idea of the grant is to create a self-sustained coalition of self-advocates throughout the state to really promote that idea of employment first. And information's only just starting to come out, and NAPC is going to be one of the main partners on this project. but we're going to be holding town hall meetings throughout the state where we're going to invite self-advocates, parents, providers to really try and gather all that information on what the barriers are. We're also going to be collecting success stories, reaching out to employers, and then trying to identify champions in each area who can hopefully start projects within their communities to help advance employment first. So more information on that as we get it. And then also, as we've talked about and we continually harp on, is contact your state legislators and your federal legislators. When there are pieces of legislation out there that you agree with, that you disagree with, it's amazing. People underestimate how much power their voice has and how much they're heard if they continue to speak up, especially as part of a group like NAPSE or NFB. It really does have a lot of power.